I'm amazed at how many people are still here when the reception will be happening real soon, so I'll try to be brief and succinct here. I do want to point out real fast that a large part of the work that I'm going to report on is supported very strongly by my right-hand man, Steve Gamut, a viticulture technician who manages a large part of the physical work that we do in the field. I'm going to give you just a little bit of quick history related to where it is we're growing at the University of Nebraska in the field. For those of you that don't travel that much, it's the crossroads of America, if you want to look at it that way. Nebraska is right in the middle. People from other countries sometimes wonder, well, my goodness, where is that? And if you go halfway almost from north to south or east to west, you'll find Nebraska. Great place to live, and I didn't expect to stay there more than 4 or 5 years, and now it's 28, so not a bad place. But it is challenging, as it is the case in many parts of the Great Plains states anyway, to grow grapes, which are very sensitive to a number of herbicides, but especially the phenoxy herbicides. 2,4-D drift can be a significant problem, and other phenoxies as well. And you might say, well, why in the Great Plains states? Well, primarily because there is such a predominance of row crops and corn and wheat and other crops where these phenoxy herbicides, especially 2,4-D, are used rather cavalierly, I might say, at times, and that leads us to some serious problems. But I thought I'd give you just a little bit of quick history of our last 5 years, actually the time frame between 2008 and 2012. I think I need to click this a couple more times to get you. This would be the growing degree days, 50 degree Fahrenheit base. That I have just put on this line for the normal. And then we can quickly put on 2008, 2009, 2010, 2011, and then 2012. Why is that so important? It was very important because it meant, as I'll show you in a moment, that bud break was early, and the soil warmed up early, and especially the corn farmers got out and started spraying for perennial weeds. Why didn't they go ahead and plant their corn crop? They couldn't because of the insurance companies do not want them planted too soon, or they won't guarantee crop insurance for them. So this created the perfect storm, in a sense, for that particular year, because the corn farmers thought, boy, the weather's so nice, I got to do something, and they got on their tractors and went out and sprayed herbicides, and it didn't seem to matter whether the wind was blowing or whether the temperatures were high. And so that led to some pretty serious problems, as I'll discuss. Just for additional bit of background, if we look at that same five-year period, remembering that 2012 was so early, bud break typically, and we've been measuring this over a much longer period than 5 years, more like 30, but 271 growing degree days is the average for bud break for our early to mid-season grapes in opening their buds in the spring. And maturity, as you see, about 2,500 to 2,600 growing degree days. By maturity, I mean when we would begin to consider harvesting our earlier grape cultivars. But notice that In 2012, even though bud break and would be typically, we would typically have 270 growing degree days around May 6th in most years, and that's the norm or the average. April 1st, and no fooling, folks, it was not an April Fool joke. We did have one of the earliest bud breaks on record, April 1st, and as I said, that led to new shoot growth, and spray damage was rife, and our earliest harvest, as you would guess, when we talk maturity for 2012 on the lower right, as early as July 26th. We know that there are basically two ways that herbicide damage can occur to a very sensitive crop like 2,4-D. One, of course, is direct spray droplet contact, where people spray when the wind's in the wrong direction. They use too fine nozzles that deliver to very fine mist that is more likely to drift or move in the air. Air movement, direct contact, causes extreme damage. But one of the more problematic areas is volatilization. When even though sprayed at a distance, and when I say at a distance, we're talking quite definitely at least up to 2 miles, perhaps more, diffusive movement of the volatile herbicide, and 2,4-D is the classic, as we say. I'll show you a couple of real quick examples of what it looks like. For those of you that don't know that, I think most of you do, and that's why you stayed this long. It is not a pretty sight when a leaf looks like that, and it doesn't photosynthesize very effectively, one might guess. I'm going to show you another one of my favorites is Norton, which is one of our grapes that grows rather well for us in the eastern Nebraska, and very productive once established, slow to establish. But look in the upper left corner, and it's an inset of showing you the leaf that was affected by 2,4-D drift. It tends to make color, in addition to making the striated pattern or shape of the leaf, but it also turns those leaves almost a cinnamon color. Very, very distinctive. And a grape that some of our growers are getting excited about growing or have been growing, and I will return to this in a few minutes, to 2,4-D damage on Sèvrevoix, a grape that's a sibling of St. Croix, a hybrid grape that does very well in the Midwest. And Maréchal Foch, an old French-American standby, again, very susceptible to 2,4-D. And the breeding program at the University of Minnesota has given us some really good grapes to try to grow in the upper Midwest especially. And there are numbered selections that we are looking at through the NE1020 and Northern Grapes projects. And so I thought I'd show you a little bit about a couple of the Minnesota selections, Minnesota 1235 and Frontenac. Frontenac has been, over the last 10 or 15 years, a definite, kind of a standard grape for many of our growers. Very productive. And you notice 2,4-D damage on foliage, yet a reasonably good, healthy-looking cluster. Next couple of panels depict the take-home message for you on this one. The things that show on this bar graph are the estimate of damage visually estimated. The taller bar means the worst, and the shorter bar means the least. And on the extreme left is Chamberson, Minnesota 1258 and Minnesota 1220 are examples, along with Vidal Blanc, that showed very little damage or less damage. And part of that probably relates not to true resistance, but rather timing of bud break. They break bud later than something like Marquette or Sabovoy. We looked at pruning weight averages, and without getting into the total details here, it was clear that Sabovoy, for example, showed a decrease in pruning weight, but it still produced a crop, which surprised us because we thought it was hurt among the worst of all of the grapes that were being tested. A couple of sidelights here. We've found that stressed vines are more susceptible to insect damage, and the apple twig borer, aka the grape vine, cane borer, can become a real serious problem. Recovery with Minnesota 1220 was by 2000. The serious incidents occurred primarily in 2012, some in 2013. The recovery by Minnesota 1220 was quite good, as these photos show. And by the time we got looking at grapes in 2015, quite a number of the grapes recovered quite well, and we were quite impressed by Petite Pearl and Sabovoy and Minnesota 1220 and their recovery ability to thrive after being damaged so much. And I'll stop there. I was told I was running short on time, and I know you're all anxious to go have a little bit of reception, but I'll be happy to answer any questions you might have. But to the bottom line is there's really no, two bottom lines, I guess, there's no escape really, other than when early sprays occur, early bud break is, or late delayed bud break, like the French American hybrids like Chamberson and Saval and Vidal Blanc showed what appeared to be resistance, but it was probably the fact that they break bud a little later, not a true resistance. So we don't have anything that's resistant. We do have a few grapes that seem to show the ability to recover better than others. And the examples I gave, Sabovoy, Minnesota 1220, and Frontenac, and what did I leave out? Well, those three particularly, Norton as well. Questions? Yes?
How close were those plants to where the spraying occurred?
The 2012 incident, we were not able, and the State Department of Ag were called out to try to determine who was the culprit, and they weren't sure, as often is the case, but it was a combination, we think, of a corn grower about half a mile away. It was not direct spray drift. It was not direct contact. It was volatile. But the same property got hit in 2013 by probable spray droplet drift from a bike trail sprayer. They were spraying, they thought they ought to kill off the weeds and make it easier for the bicyclists to get through the bike trail, and there was some serious damage as a result. But 2 miles away for volatilization is pretty commonly noted, unfortunately. Yes, sorry.
Especially with the new corn varieties coming out, is there any best management practices that you're recommending to growers in the Midwest? You know, like, what do you do? Put up a windbreak or
best,
put
question.
In a greenhouse? Or
you've got some solutions there that might work, but in a practical way, we probably won't grow them all in the greenhouse. The question is, what are best management practices to try to deal with this problem? Actually, the first one is that I would recommend to a grower is get to know your neighbors, try to convince them that there are alternative, and there are, herbicides they could be using, and obviously to follow the label. Most of these damage, especially when it occurs with droplet damage, most of those damages are they violated the label, which says don't spray when downwind for and when the wind is a certain amount and that sort of thing. But there are things that you can also we've done quite a bit actually working with the Department of Ag, and DriftWatch is a online thing that the commercial sprayers can look at to know where there are vulnerable properties, grapes especially, but they're concerned about the organic growers, they're concerned about the honeybee plantings or apiaries. Those things are something that it's an educational thing. Unfortunately, the most of the problems are not related to professional sprayers. They usually know what they should do and shouldn't do, and they are learning fast that it's going to be costly if they are identified as causing a serious damage problem. The insurance companies are getting to the point where they may not even insure a commercial sprayer if they have repeated incidents.
So
yes.
Go ahead.
That's all right.
I'll catch you later.
Thank you.
Yep.